Today on this episode of The Crossover, we will be discussing the future of medical education with CEO of NYU Langone Health and Dean of NYU School of Medicine, Dr. Robert Grossman. Learn how NYU has trailblazed the way for progressive student finances and revolutionary medical curriculums tailored for the next generation of physicians. Much more on this episode of The Crossover. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to be talking with Dean Grossman from the NYU School of Medicine, talking about the future of medical education. Hey, Dr. Grossman, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Listen, you know, thanks for joining us. I'm going to do a brief introduction just while everyone's logging on here. We are fortunate to speak with Dr. Grossman today, who is a pioneer and leader in medical education. What he's done at NYU is truly remarkable. As background, he's CEO of NYU Langone Health and Dean of the NYU School of Medicine, which was renamed in his honor in 2019. In this role, he oversees more than 45,000 employees, students, and faculty. Under his leadership, NYU Langone's revenue went from $2 billion in 2007 to over $10 billion this past year, with an additional $4 billion in philanthropy raised as well. Of note, NYU Langone's NYU Research Awards have totaled over $800 million, an increase of more than 500% compared to 2007. As Dean of the Medical School, and we'll get into this today, Dr. Grossman has really led historic and unprecedented initiatives. Number one is providing free medical tuition for all of its medical students. We'll get into that a little bit later. He also curated a new curriculum for the 21st century, which emphasizes clinical training from the very first year of medical school, and also has a revolutionary three-year MD program for select candidates. Most recently, he was the driving force behind the creation of the NYU Long Island School of Medicine, offering full tuition scholarships and an accelerated three-year curriculum exclusively for those interested in primary care. His accolades are extensive, being named Time Magazine's one of America's 50 most influential healthcare leaders. And additionally, he was named a living landmark by the New York Landmarks Conservancy. He is a prolific scientist and clinician. He's won numerous awards from the NIH, and he has trained more than 100 fellows, published more than 300 publications, and has written 5 books. And here today to discuss what is his passion, what is the future of medical education. So again, Dean Grossman, thanks for being with us today. Really a pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure.
So let's just start with background. I mean, you're a very accomplished scientist and clinician. How did you first get involved in medical education?
Well, I was involved in it, and I was interested in it since the time I was a student, medical student. And I think it was an important focus, especially when I became a staff person at the University of Pennsylvania. And thinking about how, you know, teaching actually is a very important surrogate marker for leadership. That if you're a good teacher, in many ways you have leadership potential. The analogy, Dwight Eisenhower became well known early in his career because he was a good football coach. And that was a surrogate marker because he could teach the students how to play football. And that actually made him a good general. So being a good educator, thinking about education in a generative fashion, understanding the dynamic in education is critically important as a dean, as a chairman, as a section head, whatever.
Now, you know, I had mentioned earlier, NYU has really been in the last 20 years on the forefront of medical education. You guys have so many pioneering different projects that you have done. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think we are not an institution that stays still, that's static. We're always looking to improve. We're always looking for the new next best thing. I would say, you know, our culture is one of dynamism.
And I think that kind of starts from the top. I mean, really, it started early 2000s, but then once you took over, it's clear that you guys have trailblazed, and I think that's a real role model for all other medical schools. Speaking of those initiatives, you know, NYU, as we're going to talk about, has a tuition-free medical school. Absolutely extraordinary. Give us a little background how that's possible.
Right. So I was a scholarship kid, and scholarship is very important. And if you understand that students coming to medical school, especially today, are living under significantly adverse financial conditions, and they're trying to minimize their expenses, they're conserving their housing, their food, etc. And you know, when students graduate, and the average debt is about $200,000 of debt, and you could from college and medical school, and you combine that, let's say some students marry, other medical students, $400,000, $500,000, it's unsustainable. And so we viewed that as a moral imperative, that you can't, doctors and educating doctors are critically important to this country, critically important to my generation who needs the doctors. And the question is, how to improve their financial standing. So the first thing was to create a tuition-free medical school. And it took us 12 years because it's expensive and we were totally focused on it. I had a great partner, the chairman of our board, Ken Langone, was also focused on it. He thought it was incredibly important. And over 12 years, it took us 12 years to raise $650 million, which was the corpus to support the tuition-free medical school. In addition, actually, even before we had a full tuition-free medical school, about 10 years ago, we thought that creating a three-year MD program was important. It took 1 year out. That saved some money. It also move students ahead, and training programs have gotten longer and longer, especially between residencies and fellowships. So taking 1 year out of medical training and moving students along was important, both in terms of the time frame and also in terms of saving a year of tuition and expenses.
Now, So you kind of hinted at this. Do you believe that medical training is too long in this country?
I think, let me put it this way. I would say medical school is too long. I'm not sure medical training, but medical school. So we have spent a lot of time understanding aspects of a three-year program. This year, our medical school is going to an all three-year program. So if students want to stay for another year, they can get a master's degree, they can do research or whatever, but you have the ability to graduate in 3 years. And we thought the fourth year had become a year basically of auditions for residencies. And it was unfair from a lot of perspectives because not our school, but other schools were taking the tuition money and the students were auditioning in other places to get residencies. And it didn't seem fair because then you're putting the burden on the families, the students, the financial burden of that year. And the schools are just taking the money.
So how did you cut that year out? What superfluous material did you guys take out to go from 4 to 3 years?
Yeah, we really didn't take out superfluous material. What we did was we made core rotations in a year, and we changed the curriculum, so the curriculum was pretty intense. And you have all your basic rotations. We were satisfying all the requirements, but we did it in 3 years instead of 4 years. And you know, some of your electives, secondary electives may be gone, but a lot of the fourth year, as you know, for many students were rotations on different, in different hospitals. Students were going abroad to do service or whatever. And we thought, sure, that's nice, but the essential part is to be able to finish medical school in 3 years and have your choices of what you want to do next.
Now, what has been your experience thus far? You guys also pioneered that accelerated pathway where if someone is an outstanding college student, they can not only get into medical school, but also into residency.
Right.
What has been your experience with that program?
Yeah, that's been an enormous success. So that was our first endeavor into a three-year program. So we gave people a choice to apply. So when you think about it, a lot of students coming to medical school today are very different than when I went to medical school. They're much more sophisticated. They have tremendous experiences. A lot of them really know what they want to do. And so we felt if you really want knew what you wanted to do, you could apply to medical school and then apply secondarily to get into the residency program. And we opened up slots at NYU for those particular students. And thus, when you got into what we call the three-year program, you were guaranteed the residency slot. And that was an enormous success. And we have studied those students, and those students, more of them have become chief residents. They're incredibly happy with the program. They're incredibly happy. They did it in 3 years. And when we studied, was there any defect or shortcoming in those students, you couldn't, they were identical to the students who graduated in 4 years.
Wow. So, you know, clearly that has had an influence on other medical schools because they're trying to do that down here at Miami. And I know that multiple other schools have seen what you're doing as a role model and they're trying to emulate. Now, as a program director of a surgical specialty, I'm just going to play devil's advocate. You know, I would argue that it's very difficult to pick appropriate candidates with the appropriate fit, even after 4 years full of medical school experiences and data. And I would argue this pathway carries the risk in small surgical specialties of having attrition or mismatches. What's your answer to that?
Well, we've done the experiment and we haven't seen that. And
really?
I would say that there have been a few students who have left. You know, you can count them on the fingers of your hand. And especially in neurosurgery. In neurosurgery, they have loved the students who have opted in. And of course, there's the potential, you know, there's the potential that students don't pan out, as you point out, after 4 years. So the marginal utility of the 1 year, I'm not sure it really adds much.
Agreed. Yeah, it's super exciting. We are trying it down here, and you guys have the data. So obviously, data is what speaks volumes. Let's talk about objective grading, which in medical school has become increasingly scarce. For example, most medical schools are pass-fail now completely. Step one is now pass-fail. What are your thoughts on these trends, and are we helping or are we hurting medical students by eliminating objective grading?
Yeah. So our medical school is much more traditional. We have grades, particularly in the clinical years, and we also have AOA. And, you know, our feeling, so if you come to NYU, you're great. You know, I could tell you the average MedCats are in the 99th percentile, and the grade point average is 3.96. So they're great students. They get great residencies. Having said that, the students want to know, number one, how they're doing. And number two, we want to know and we want to celebrate the very best performers. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's like everybody here is a winner. But it is important to identify and celebrate exceptional performers. And we feel that it helps students who have to basically confront material.
What do you recommend for program directors such as myself looking at students as these objective measures decrease? How do you, or I mean, you know, how would you evaluate students that are coming out of pass-fail medical schools, past step one, no AOA? It's very hard to judge.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? So the other students are at a competitive, so your program will take a student who's coming out who you know how they perform. So the students who are coming out of pass-fail schools, and neurosurgery is highly competitive field, right? You have 2-3 openings, I guess, per year, and you have all these applicants, and you say, how do I distinguish them? So I think those schools are doing a disservice to the students to have a pass-fail to be pass-fail, and the inability for you in a competitive residency to distinguish their best students. And that's the side of it that sometimes students don't understand, and sometimes medical schools don't understand the ability, what they say, they want to decrease stress, but it actually increases stress. If you've worked like crazy to get into a neurosurgery program and you can't be distinguished from the other applicants, that's a disservice in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you can't handle the stress of a step one score, probably not going to bode well for your neurosurgical career. But I want to talk about the landscape of medicine, which is really changing at a very rapid pace. How is NYU preparing its medical students for a career in this rapidly evolving field? So, for example, the business of medicine, which was never taught and still is not really taught, is such a large part of a physician's success, not just caring for the patient, but the entire business aspect. Are you guys evolving your curriculum? Are there resources available for your students?
There are resources. You know, we are not emphasizing the business aspect of medicine, honestly, to medical students. I think, they are, the material that they're confronting is ferocious. And so we are really focused on creating and giving our students the best education in medicine. The business part of it is an aspect of it that I acknowledge is important, but I think you can learn that after medical school.
Got you. Are there any other evolving parts of medicine that you want to stay on the forefront in terms of your curriculum?
Well, we're very involved and we're in the forefront, I think, of electronic medicine, of teaching. We don't have a traditional anatomy course. We have prosected specimens and a lot of virtual anatomy, and we think our anatomy course is really superb. But we don't, our students don't do traditional dissection, and we don't have bodies. We spend a lot of time, so students get tremendous amounts of data from our, from the electronic health record, and they're able to download information specific to the patients they're seeing to be able to really have a unique patient experience with respect to education. And I think in terms of facilities, we're in the forefront of every new technology. So the students are exposed to these technologies, which then become standard in 5 to 10 years. The other thing we try to do is have our best doctors teach the students. And that's very important.
Yeah, because that last part, I don't think many places do that. I don't think necessarily the best doctors teach the students.
Right. So I'll give you an example. So in our anatomy course, Eddie Rodriguez, the head of plastic surgery who did the face transplant, teaches anatomy. John Golfinos, the head of neurosurgery, teaches anatomy. Robert Montgomery is the lecturer in transplant. So they're our leaders are our teachers.
Yeah, I think everyone has skin in the game, so to speak, and I think that's a huge aspect of your medical school. Let's talk about diversity, which has been shown to be essential for any successful organization. What is NYU doing to maximize diversity and inclusion throughout its institution?
So we take it very seriously. We have an entire institute, the Institute for Health Equity, Excellence in Health Equity and Diversity, which we put together. It's under the leadership of Benga Ogedegbe, who's a great leader. And it has a number of pillars. It has an education pillar, a clinical pillar, where we are focused on promoting diversity, getting the highest quality students, training them, having huge community input. Part of, we got a $167 million grant from the Bezos Foundation to promote diversity and health equity in Brooklyn. We have a whole institution, NYU Langone Brooklyn, which is situated in the highest concentration of Medicaid in the United States. So we are, we're all in terms of trying to create health equity for all of our communities, all of our diverse communities in the New York metropolitan area.
That's great to hear. And obviously that initiative starts from the top. So again, kudos to you. Talking about the research, you know, NYU is a research powerhouse with over $1 billion essentially in NIH funding. How do you dovetail that research enterprise with the medical education? Do the medical students have access to that?
Sure. You know, again, it goes back to having opportunities to interact with our best scientists in lectures, in forums, in study groups. And a lot of the students who come here have already had experience in research. You know, they're gifted students. They have opportunities to do any type of research they want, and they get tremendous exposure. We created a large infrastructure, particularly to do programmatic grants. But research is a cornerstone to this institution. It's been that way since 1841. You know, we had Salk and Sabin. We've had four Nobel Prize winners here. It's a obviously a research institution, and research, all types of research are embraced here. Clinical research, basic science research, translational research. And we feel, as I said, we feel very proud of our efforts and the research that has been done here that has had a profound effect on the health of our country.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys get people involved early, and I think the early exposure to academia helps groom these future leaders in the field. You know, give us your crystal ball view here, just wrapping up, because I know you're super busy. Where do you see medical education headed in the next 5, 10, 20 years? Give us some major changes that you would envision coming across in the next decade or two.
Well, I think, as you alluded to, more schools are going to tend towards 3-year MDs. So it'll change the whole context of medical education. It'll be a continuum of medical education. I'm not sure how these pass-fail experiments are going to work. I think you may see people reverting back to more traditional ways, particularly if everything becomes pass-fail, the only thing you're going to have maybe are your SAT scores, which are no predictors of how medicine, but clearly you need ways to predict how students are going to do. I think there's going to be a lot more emphasis on metrics, because they are both objective and happy ways of doing things. And doctors are, you know, on the one hand, we're going to pass fail. On the other hand, doctors are going to be judged by third parties in terms of effectively grading them.
Yep.
And I don't think we're going to, this country is going to accept in the intermediate term a socialized situation. I think it's much more about pay for performance. And the institutions and the doctors who don't perform are going to be pushed aside because they're not cost effective.
Yeah. Well, listen, Dean Grossman, thank you so much for your time. I just want to say what a trailblazer you and that institution are. For people who don't really know, NYU has really changed the game when it comes to medical school. Free tuition, only 3 years. I mean, that's amazing with everything you've done there. Again, kudos for really being a role model for all the other medical schools.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words and very nice to meet you.
All right. Take care. Have a great day.